identity and equipping all Catholics to take co-responsibility for Christ Church.
This is Full-Time Catholic Radio for Southeast Michigan, 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit.
Cresta in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
With the New York Times in one hand and the Catechism of the Catholic Church in the other, Al Cresta is ready for conversations of consequence.
A good Catholic is a faithful citizen.
Make America great again!
What's more important here is not saving the country, it's saving your soul.
It's a bold strategy.
Let's see if it pays off.
Our trust in the media has hit its lowest point.
I want the truth!
What is truth?
Age of the passive layperson can't go on.
It's our job to share that love of Christ with these people.
This is an excellent mission, sir, with an extremely valuable objective.
Broadcasting from the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and taking a closer Catholic look at current events, issues, and ideas. This is Cresta in the Afternoon.
Al, this is an excellent program.
You have a wonderful show.
I love listening to my car.
That's a great question to start off with.
You are in for a show tonight.
Here we go again.
And a good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta and glad to be here. We got another 2 hours talking about the things that matter most. And one of the big items in the news today, of course, healthcare, because we've got, we'll have posted for you a New York Times piece, which takes a look in a very graphically effective way at the differences between the three plans that are on the table now. But here, do you remember last week, Senator Bernie Sanders laid out a single-payer plan that was backed immediately by at least 15 Democrat senators. Now, this is what used to be called socialized medicine. So people want to take that phrase and twist and run it around any way you want. Look, what that means, though, is it means government health care. It means a diminishing of free market incentives. It means that we're going to have somebody else paying for health care other than the patient. And one of the problems with that is that when you're paying for your health care, you're checking out what's worth it and what's not worth it. We're going to talk to Brad Hahn about this problem. I'm not saying healthcare is simply a matter of reaching deep in your pocket. That's not what I'm talking about. But you want the patient to be as close as possible to paying the bills so that they can monitor what things cost. And Brad Hahn and other groups have been working hard for new ways of taking care of health insurance. For instance, he's started Solidarity Health Share, and you can learn more. He and Chris Faddis did this, SolidarityHealthShare.org. You're going to hear stories of what happened when they refused to accept a fee given by hospitals and when they went and renegotiated that, and in some cases, knocking prices down by 90%. Why is that? Well, those are the questions that we won't ask anymore once we've got a fully government-based healthcare system. There's nothing necessarily immoral about such a system, so I want to make that clear. But it is a question of effectiveness. We want to know what will be effective. And I'm telling you, we've been looking at this for 40 years now, at least 40 years. And we seem to be as divided today as ever on it. So we've got a new bill. Bill Cassidy's introduced new health care legislation. We've got Sanders' plan. And we've got a conversation coming up with Brad Hahn today from Solidarity Health Share. Also, Gabriel Kuby joins me. She was a leader in the Cultural Revolution of the 1960s. Now she's seen the problem and has now been working as a Catholic to help build a civilization of love and to restore those norms of natural law and moral order. We'll be talking about the global sexual revolution, I guess is the way to put it. That's coming up. I have a few news notes dealing with activities in North Korea. and in Belgium. And then we're going to be joined by Dr. Joshua Hochschild from Mount St. Mary's Seminary and University, where he has been working on finding peace in a turbulent age. Again, trying to find what St. Augustine called the tranquility of order. But first, we've got Nick Tom in today's news.
Thank you very much, Al. Welcome, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Wednesday, September 20th. It is the feast of Saints Andrew Tim Kagan, Paul Chong Hassan, and companions. And today's news is brought to you in part by the Ave Maria Family of Funds at AveMariaFunds.com. Rescuers in Mexico City are racing against time as they dig through the ruins of a school destroyed in Tuesday's deadly earthquake. Sharon Reed has the latest.
Rescue crews and volunteers, many working with their bare hands, are climbing through the debris that was once a school in Mexico City. They're crawling into dangerous crevices and occasionally calling for silence in hopes of hearing a survivor. Dozens of buildings were damaged or destroyed in that magnitude 7.1 tremor. The Mexican federal government is operating under a state of emergency as the workers scramble to find more survivors in the rubble. Sharon Reed, NBC News Radio.
San Juan Mayor Carmen Julian Cruz is begging Americans not to forget their fellow citizens as Hurricane Maria slams into Puerto Rico.
Remember that you are part of us even if you're not here. Don't forget us. Just don't forget us.
After storming through the Caribbean, Maria is pummeling 3.5 million Americans in Puerto Rico with wind gusts from 150 to 190 miles per hour. Governor Ricardo Rossello says that Maria could be the most catastrophic storm to hit the island in a century. It's the 10th strongest Atlantic hurricane ever recorded. Forecasters expect Puerto Rico to be hit with 2 feet of rain and another 9 feet of storm surge, likely causing massive flooding. Tens of thousands of Puerto Ricans are already in shelters, and that number is expected to grow as buildings are destroyed. Chinese officials are reaching out in support of Venezuela. Correspondent Bill Zimfer has the story.
China's state news agency says the two countries have held discussions at the UN General Assembly meetings and that China continues to have an all-around strategic partnership with Venezuela. Venezuela was included in the group of countries run by repressive governments, pointed out by President Trump in his speech on Tuesday. More than 100 people have been killed in months of government protests in Venezuela. Bill Zimfer, NBC News Radio.
The Federal Reserve is holding interest rates steady. Policymakers wrapped up their September meeting today by leaving the Fed's benchmark interest rate at 1.25%. The central bank expects to raise the rate one more time later this year. And now your fascinating fact for the day. The first recorded tonsillectomy was performed in 1000 B.C. Reporting for Ave Maria Radio News, I'm Nick Tom.
Good afternoon. Over the last week, Senators Bernie Sanders and Bill Cassidy have both introduced new health care legislation. Sanders' plan, backed by at least 15 Democratic senators, is a single-payer plan that would expand Medicare into, well, universal health insurance. Okay. Bill Cassidy's plan, and co-sponsored by Lindsey Graham, Dean Heller, and Ron Johnson, is a new effort to repeal Obamacare before the end of the month. It gives it a deadline for Senate action. The huge differences between the two bills, and one more sign, I think, of the deep divisions within Congress. Many people wondering, in fact, if this is an impossible problem to solve. With me is Brad Hahn. Brad's a deeply committed Catholic brother who helped found a Solidarity Health Share with Chris Faddis. Again, a creative Catholic approach to the health care issues. He now serves as the ministry's CEO and secretary. He's a member of the Arizona Bar, the Canon Law Society of America, Catholic Medical Association, and is an allied attorney with the Alliance Defending Freedom. You can follow his work at SolidarityHealthShare.org. Hey, Brad, good to have you back.
Yes, thank you, Al.
So in this development of America, let me start with the most basic question. We've watched this. I remember when Hillary Clinton was tasked with it back in 1992 or 93. And since that time, we haven't seemed to resolve the problems of health care in America, expanding costs, the idea of universal coverage. Is this a problem that can't be solved using the principles that we presently see the Congress employing?
Yeah, I agree with that statement. I don't think it can be cannot I don't think it can be solved with their current strategy and tactics. Mm-hmm. And, yep. And there's a couple reasons I say that. Is number one is when the Affordable Care Act was passed, it was a political genius to expand the Medicaid funding of it. And so then once you expand an entitlement program by the federal government, it's very hard to take that back.
Absolutely, so, yeah.
And that's what I've been seeing with the Graham Cassidy bill right now, is there are still the Affordable Care Act, all the taxes that are associated with that, you know, like every single American is paying, you know, 0.9% more in payroll tax just to fund this Affordable Care Act. That's still in existence under the Graham Cassidy bill. But instead of giving that money to insurance companies, that the Graham Cassidy bill gives that money to the states to decide how it's going to be spent. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to me, it's no one's asking the question anymore, Al. Should a federal government be involved in our medical care, the payment of our medical costs? It's this presumption that they're going to be.
Yeah.
And to me, that's the flaw. And that's where we kind of need some kind of free market principles in there to help counterbalance that.
I agree with you. I think it's now been assumed, and that was actually the in some way the big political achievement for Obamacare was the assumption that now we all know that this is only going to be solved through federal health care legislation. And I think that's where most people are. I agree with you. And I don't know what happens to change the terms of the debate, because that's what has to happen here. I don't know if let me ask you this. One thing that can change the terms of a debate is an alternate system, even if it's a small system, that people see works. So, for instance, in this case, a free market system that's operating maybe over a certain people group, say the Amish or a group of Protestant fundamentalists or Lutherans or whatever, a plan that's actually working for this people group and it's operating on free market principles. Are we going to see anything like that?
Well, that's exactly what we're doing at Solidarity HealthShare, and that's exactly what basically the premise of medical cost-sharing ministries are.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've talked about this before, Al, the issue is that whole third-party payer system where the consumer has no idea what they're paying for because a third party pays for the medical bills. Well, with Solidarity and medical cost-sharing ministry, members of those ministries are self-pay or cash-pay paying, clients or patients. And so that's what we do on behalf of our membership is try to negotiate a fair and reasonable rate where the doctors still make money, the hospitals still make money, but it's not the egregiously, overbilling that you see.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll give you an example of that. We just had a bill submitted to Solidarity HealthShare. One of our members had a heart attack and had to go to the emergency room, and thank God he's doing well today. But that bill submitted to him and to Solidarity was $174,000. And we looked at it through our computer system to see what a fair and reasonable price would be in that area. And we thought $17,000 was a more accurate description of what the services that was provided to him.
Wow.
And the hospital accepted that $17,000.
So one-tenth? One-tenth?
Yeah. And so that's what's crazy about this.
Yep.
We experience this every day, and to me, that's what's beautiful about these health sharing ministries is because, you know, we're approaching the doctors and saying, you know, listen, we're not going to play this overbill game. Just raise a fair and reasonable price to you. Will you accept this? You know, and we've had providers calling us just thanking us. You guys are so easy to work with. It's no nonsense.
I mean, it is amazing, and this has been the fear all along with rising healthcare costs. It's the idea that there isn't sufficient accountability on the part of those who are actually footing the bill. I remember back in the mid-1980s, I took a new position with the church, and the deacon board there told me that they were certainly going to cover my health care. But when I wanted to expand coverage for other members of the staff, they were dead set against it because they said, look, this health care thing is just going to explode over the next decade, and we're not going to be able to afford it unless we have massive growth here. So, I mean, we're talking about this has been known well. That was in the mid-'80s, and the people that were that I was talking to were not pioneers in research in the field. You know what I'm saying? They were just your average consumer. So we've seen these. We knew these problems were coming. And yet, here we are, what's that, 40 years later, and we still haven't resolved this. That's terrible.
It's because we're still asking the wrong questions, Al, you know, and this whole Affordable Care Act, and it's basically we're subsidizing the health insurance industry,
right?
You know, and the insurance industry, their profits were up 16% last year. That's one issue. The other issue that tells me that Congress isn't getting this is when the House and Speaker Ryan's plan, they try to push that through in the spring. The counter was after the CBO, you know, Congressional Budget Office said it was going to, you know, lose a lot of people who had health insurance coverage. They said, well, what about pre-existing conditions? And so then they did an amendment to the bill. Oh, to solve pre-existing conditions, let's just give $50 billion more to the insurance companies to cover pre-existing conditions. And to me, that's a fundamental lack of understanding of the issue.
Right.
We got a crippled and able system. Let's give it more money.
That's right. I mean, it's amazing. So you've got, these new bills are the cost sharing subsidies are going to be to help with deductibles and copays. With all the three bills before us, the American Health Care Act, the Better Care Reconciliation Act, and now the Graham-Cassidy bill, they all end cost sharing subsidies that were meant to help with deductibles and copays. But they're also phasing out, for the most part, Medicaid expansion.
Right.
Where are they getting? I mean, I think all of these bills want to eventually. They would like there to be universal coverage to the degree that people want to be covered, at least. How do they do that? You know, how do they ensure? Because the moral force of the argument was, we have to make sure everybody's covered. How do they do that and maintain cost? We got only about 40 seconds.
I don't see how they can do that under the current system because when you put that third-party payer system in there with the insurance company involved, they're either going to have to say we're only going with one insurance company, you know, and then they're going to have to over-regulate that. That's going to truly inhibit the free market forces in our health care, what we pay for.
Which hold people accountable. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what we need to address, that third-party payer system. Until we get that resolved.
We'll talk again and soon because there are other things I wanted to go in with you today. Thank you, Brad.
Thank you, Al.
Looking for a way to release more joy in your marriage amidst the stresses of everyday life? Come to the new upbeat Everyday in Love 4-part marriage workshop at Our Lady of Good Counsel Parish in Plymouth. Engaging sessions include Smart Loving, Talking with a Purpose, The Passionate Couple, and Living the Dream. Begin Sunday, October 1st. Sign up at olgcparish.net/register. That's olgcparish.net/register.
Based on the popular Living in Love program and co-sponsored by the Archdiocese of Detroit.
Hello, this is Steve Ray, and my wife Janet and I would like to invite you to join us on the Catholic Heritage of Mexico pilgrimage. It's a great country of delightful surprises, one of the places where Christianity started in the Western Hemisphere. We're going to visit Mexico City, but we're going to spend a lot of time in Guadalupe with time to study and pray and learn as we go through this wonderful country. We hope that you can join us.
To learn more about your Ave Maria radio trip, go to AveMariaRadio.net and find the pilgrimage link.
The kids are back in school, fall sports are in full swing, and the crisp fall air is a true blessing. Hi, I'm Dan Hall from Pinckney Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, and we're very excited about our new Jeep Celebration event going on now. You can lease a new Jeep Renegade or the all-new Jeep Compass for as low as $149 per month. or the Ram Crew Cab 4x4 pickup and the all-new Chrysler Pacifica, the award-winning minivan, for only $249 per month. Experience the difference with professional treatment and the absolute lowest payments in Michigan, only at Pinckney Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, or visit us online at PinckneyChrysler.com.
The mystery of death has troubled and fascinated humanity since the beginning of time. Our own experiences of mourning deceased family members and friends teach us the deep longing of the human heart for hope in the face of death. Many Catholics have lost a clear sense of how to face this experience with faith and peace. Planning funeral services in advance is not only a gift to our family and friends, but it is an affirmative way to embrace our own call to resurrection. Please take this time to call your local parish or diocese about pre-planning your cemetery and funeral rites. This message brought to you by Catholic Management Services.
Cresta in the Afternoon is brought to you in part by the Ave Maria Mutual Funds, investment funds that are designed and screened to be pro-life and pro-family. Six different Ave Maria mutual funds are available to help you reach your long-term investment objectives, smart investing, and Catholic values. The number to learn more about the Ave Maria mutual funds is 866-AVE-MARIA. That's 866-283-6274 or at AveMariaFunds.com.
Cresta in the Afternoon is underwritten in part by Charity Mobile. Communication is critical. And in today's world, your cellular service is your lifeline to family and friends. Ave Maria Radio and Charity Mobile are partners in communicating the most important message of all, the good news of Jesus Christ. Charity Mobile is a provider of cellular LTE phones and service and has been a proud supporter of Ave Maria Radio and other pro-life causes for more than 10 years. More information at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile. Charity begins at phone.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
The Catholic solution to the healthcare problem is here. Are you fed up with the current healthcare system, paying too much for your healthcare costs? Solidarity HealthShare is a healthcare sharing ministry which provides an ethical way to fund healthcare costs while protecting and practicing our Catholic beliefs. Best yet, Solidarity HealthShare's members are exempt from the fines and penalties in the Affordable Care Act. Visit SolidarityHealthShare.org to join like-minded Catholics in sharing medical expenses.
This Ave Maria radio program is brought to you in part by St. Gregory Retreat Centers, America's new standard for substance abuse recovery programs. The St. Gregory Recovery Program combines the latest in evidence-based treatment with traditional Catholic teaching on virtue. Mass and reconciliation are also available. More information is available today at 888-778-5833 or at stgregoryctr.com.
And a good afternoon to you. I'm Al Cresta. Being born in 1951 and growing up in the 1960s, coming of age during that period of time, I was clearly a child of the sexual revolution. And I can remember as an adolescent what people were saying. And the irony that I came to notice as I got older, the irony was that in the name of freedom, in the name of casting aside all of these puritanical or medieval or oppressive restraints on sexual expression, somehow we would achieve greater liberty. Now, as I got older, it began to dawn on me that we weren't seeing greater liberty. We were seeing greater trauma, greater enslavement, and lots of hurt, broken relationships, fragmented families. And we now, here as we enter we're well into the next millennium, it now looks as though we've had a global sexual revolution that in the name of freedom has been destroying freedom and actually destroying the family as well. My guest, Gabriel Kuby, is the author of The Global Sexual Revolution. She was a student of sociology at the Free University of Berlin in 1967, which was a pivotal year of upheaval and rebellion among European students and U.S. students, that 67-68 year. She converted to the Catholic faith, though, in 1997, 30 years later, and has become a successful author of books on spiritual and political issues, and also an international speaker. Gabriel, good to have you with me. Thank you.
Hello, Al. Good to have you, to be in your broadcast.
Yes.
Now, when did you first begin to notice that what was being proclaimed as sexual emancipation was actually having all kinds of negative personal and social consequences?
I think it was at the beginning of the millennium. That was after my own conversion.
Mm-hmm.
If we turn to God, we have a new light, and we look at our lives differently. We recognize sin, which we didn't recognize before,
mm-hmm.
and we have a new light to look at society. And it dawned on me that really the deregulation of the sexual moral norms or standards are the chief destroying force of our individual lives, of our personality, and of the whole of society.
By the way, what led you to see in the Catholic Church a plausible future for you?
Well, that's my conversion story. I'm happy to tell it.
Sure.
I try to make it as short as possible.
Sure.
I was involved in the 68 movement. I got married civilly, and we have three beautiful children. Our marriage got into severe trouble. We separated, not knowing any better. And in that deepest, lowest point of my life, somebody came and brought a novena and said, pray. That was at the very beginning of 1996. My husband had just moved out. I prayed this novena in front of a Buddha statue and other things which I had collected. And at the end, I knew I would become a Catholic without any doubt. So God has his mysterious and amazing ways
he does.
For people individually to turn around.
Indeed, indeed. Has the sexual revolution been simply the natural human tendency to kick against the goads, to want to bust out, or is it part of an orchestrated policy on the part of revolutionaries?
Yes, I'm convinced it is an orchestrated policy, and you can prove it.
Okay.
It is. We speak about a revolution. Usually revolutions happen from a part of the low stratum of population,
right,
who are very dissatisfied with the state of affairs and the regulation of power, and they rebel. And what is happening now is the opposite. It is a top-down revolution. It is insinuated. It is put on by the elites of power of this world. At the front are the United Nations, the European Union, and it is pressed and forced on the nations of this world. And now, we now have one proof, that's the hacking of the email account of George Soros. 2,400 emails were out in the open, and we could see this billionaire with this open society is financing all the movements which destroy marriage and family. That is radical feminism and LGBT. And he's now very worried. I got the news today. On his Twitter account, he says there's a new dangerous concept, gender ideology. This will give fuel, energy to the conservative movement. We have to go against it. And I must say I'm very proud that I have quite a part in making this concept of gender ideology known in the world. I'm speaking about nothing else more or less since 12 years.
Well, let's take him as an example. What is in it for him? In other words, how does he benefit by, financing these movements and knocking down traditional moral restraints?
Yes, that's the big question. It's very difficult to answer.
Okay.
But what we can see is that all the billionaires, I already said, UN and EU, International Planned Parenthood, the Rockefeller Foundation,
mm-hmm.
they are all into it. They are. If you look at the World Health Organization, if you look who signs these programs of sexualizing small children in school, you see huge organizations around the world. You can show that this. I'm showing it in my book and documenting the sources.
Mm-hmm.
But why? And I can only come up with one theoretical answer, that is that those in power want to have a world population that they can manipulate,
yeah,
and that has not the strength to rise up against structures of power. Because if you don't know who you are, if you don't even know whether you're a man or a woman, don't know your family, don't know your roots, have lost all your roots, where's your strength? There's no strength left to rise up against anything.
Yeah.
And I cannot come to another solution than this kind of an explanation.
And it is true that one of the earliest pieces of data that a young human develops is that there's male and female. Mommy is different than daddy. My sister is different than me. And there's not a whole lot of reflection on these things. It's just assumed, and it is a bedrock certainty, that there's kind of a binary divide here. There's male and female. And once you begin to get, it seems to me, once you begin to get, especially young adolescents, doubting that binary confidence, you're going to remove from them some basic strengths about knowing anything at all. Their whole epistemology will change, I believe, if we abolish that binary distinction.
We are abolishing it in all levels. There's this huge push to have a one-world government,
mm-hmm,
to overcome all distinctions, to let everybody be a part, to destroy any kind of hierarchy,
mm-hmm,
to destroy any kind of authority. All this runs with the label equality. We want equality. And in reality, this is a replacement. Well, people believe that this generates justice. But we have the communist experiment,
right,
which cost millions and millions and millions of lives. It doesn't work.
Right.
We are not equal.
Right.
And justice means to give every person his or her due. And that's the basis of justice, to have a system which is just to the differences we have, to the diversity we have. And this is not equality, not leveling out all differences. It makes life very, very boring.
Your book goes over some of the trailblazers of the sexual revolution, taking all the way back to the French Revolution, and then, of course, the Malthusianism, and then later with Margaret Sanger, the eugenics movement, yes, Marx, Engels, Wilhelm Reich. Still not known by as many people as should know him. He's quite a remarkable fellow with tremendous,
yes,
influence among the elites, at least in the United States. John Money, you mentioned as well. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yes.
You were going to comment.
Is Wilhelm Reich recognized in the United States? Does he have an influence there?
Oh, yes. Among elites, he did. He was frequently discussed in the 1960s and early 70s. You don't hear much about him now, but his work, this idea of the apocalyptic orgasm, or whatever you want to call it, is out there. It's functioning in people's expectations of what life holds for them.
Well, Wilhelm Reich was a pupil of Freud, Sigmund Freud,
yes,
fell away of him. And in the Weimar Republic, that is before the Second World War, he actually started a political sexual movement. He wrote a book, The Sexual Revolution, and very to the point analyzed, if you sexualize people, especially children, you will bring down the so-called bourgeois society.
Mm-hmm.
And he was right.
Yep.
And this was true. The difference is that at his time, he was a revolutionary outsider. He had to leave Germany when the Nazis came because he was a Jew. He had the most astonishing theories of building machines which could collect the sexual energy from,
yes,
wheat fields,
that's right,
stuff like this. Yeah.
Yep, yep.
He ended in a lunatic asylum, and his partner committed suicide. So usually these people don't have a very happy ending.
Right.
Then it was a queer outsider. But in the 68 movement, all this was picked up. And I remember studying sociology at the Free University of Berlin, that his works were sold illegally because at the time they were still forbidden. And this just lasted a year. And then the big publisher in Germany published his things. And the left-wing movement just grabbed it and said, oh, this is going to be our freedom. Herbert Marcuse was one of them who took up the same message.
And became very popular in the United States, in Southern California. Hold it there, would you, Gabriel? We'll come back and continue conversation. This is an outstanding book called The Global Sexual Revolution, Destruction of Freedom in the Name of Freedom. It traces the intellectual forebears of this movement. We're going to continue conversation. I'm Al Cresta.
Would you like to learn more about your Catholic faith and be a more effective evangelist? Sacred Heart Major Seminary trains leaders serving in parishes and ministries across the country. Attend classes at our Detroit campus or take courses online. Learn from faculty who are experts in the new evangelization. There's tuition help up to 80% off. Learn more at shms.edu/study. That's shms.edu/study.
The National Museum of African American History and Culture recently opened in Washington, D.C. Unfortunately, the museum has been politicized from the very beginning, and this was on full display when armed security officers ordered our clients, an African American pastor and an African American woman, off of the public sidewalk outside of the museum because they were displaying signs that are part of a project to illustrate the devastating effects abortion is having on the black community. According to the Centers for Disease Control, although African-American women account for only 11% of the female population, they are the victims of 36% of all abortions. By 2009, 16 million black children had been aborted. By 2014, 18 million African-American babies had been aborted. The museum is silent about this black genocide. Instead, it celebrates the radically pro-abortion Black Lives Matter movement, and it celebrates the tenure of pro-abortion Justice Thurgood Marshall. Meanwhile, Justice Clarence Thomas, a humanely pro-life African-American currently serving on the High Court, is defiantly denied any mention. If the museum curators won't tell the story about the impact of abortion on the black community inside the museum, our clients will tell it outside. We are challenging the museum's violation of our clients' free speech rights in federal court in Washington, D.C. I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel for the American Freedom Law Center, bringing you this Faith and Freedom Minute. You can learn more about the American Freedom Law Center and its fight for your faith and freedom by visiting our website and liking us on Facebook.
Looking for affordable Catholic health care? Look no further. CMF Curo is the only Catholic health ministry which provides an established health care program, spiritual growth opportunities within Catholic community, and unique wellness programs and health tools. Plus, it is half the cost of many insurances. Learn more at mycatholichealthcare.com or visit cmfcuro.com. CMF Curo. It's my Catholic healthcare.
Today's programming on 990 WDEO is brought to you in part by a gift made from our day sponsor. To honor Father Tom Wazalewski, pastor at Old St. Pat's Church on Whitmore Lake Road. We're so grateful for your leadership. And may God continue to bless you all the days of your life. You can be a day sponsor too. Call toll free 1-877-288-1077 and say, I want to be a day sponsor.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popcha.
Want to be more successful? Be humble. A study at Duke University found that successful people tend to exhibit more humility than less successful people in the same field. Being humble doesn't mean beating up on yourself or denying real gifts or talents. That's self-deprecation, which is neither a strength nor a virtue. Exercising true humility, in both the theological and psychological sense, means being willing to see that you don't have all the answers and you can learn a lot from listening to the people around you. Researchers found that humble people did a better job of adapting to new circumstances and soliciting support from others, both of which contributed to the increased success of more humble participants in the study. Jesus said that the meek will inherit the earth. Well, science and the Bible agree. Let humility be the secret of your success. I'm Dr. Greg Popcheck, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. With me, Gabriel Kubi, author of The Global Sexual Revolution. We've been discussing some of the antecedents of this movement and some of its funding. You refer to the Yogyakarta principles here. That's a new term for me. I hadn't heard that before.
Okay. I gave it a whole chapter in my book.
Yes.
Because these Yogyakarta principles are a blueprint for the totalitarian change of society.
Mm-hmm.
Yogyakarta is a town in Indonesia. In 2007, so-called human rights experts met there and devised 29 principles, the so-called Yogyakarta principles, how to change society on all levels according to LGBT strategy.
I see.
And it's really, you know, I'm German, we have this Nazi past,
right.
And the big reproach is, why didn't you know? You could have known.
Yes.
And I've put this in because we can know now what is going on.
Okay.
It is a totalitarian change of society, and now sexuality, it's very strange. Now sexuality is in the focus of the totalitarian change of society. Why is it? If a human being has no control of a sexual drive, he's a slave to a sexual drive.
Exactly.
And if he's a slave to his own sexual drive, he will be a slave to any kind of power above him.
Mm-hmm.
You can do with him what you like. He is not able to make, to lead a society, to put a really positive impact in society and defend freedom, because freedom always has to be restored by every generation. Freedom is never given. Freedom always, we always have to work and fight for freedom, for true freedom.
Absolutely.
So I thought this was important.
Yes.
These Yogyakarta principles. Just read them there. You find them in the internet, and you also find a practical. What's it called? A toolbox for LGBT activists. How do you change your society? How do you do it in India? How do you do it in Nepal? How do you do it in Japan? Wherever, or in an Islamic country? And they give you the know-how. They give you the experts. They give you the lawyers. They give you the organizations. They give you the UN network. And off you go.
Hmm.
Change your society. This is what is happening.
When did this idea of the abolition of male and female, the abolition of binary sexuality, when do you see that gaining momentum in Europe? How long ago?
Very short time ago. Very instrumental for it is a US-American philosopher. Her name is Judith Butler.
Yes, uh-huh.
From California University. She's a pupil of Charles Foucault. Foucault, his name is.
Yes.
Michel Foucault. A homosexual who died of AIDS in the 80s.
In many ways, probably the most famous disciple of Nietzschean philosophy, don't you think?
Right,
yeah.
Right. And she's a pupil of him.
Okay.
So she carried that on. And in 1990, she published a book, Gender Trouble, Subversion of Identity. This is philosophical gibberish. It's so, you know, you don't understand it, so you think it must be above you. You're just not clever enough to understand it.
Yeah.
And it's partly just nonsense.
Yeah.
In a clever woman who has studied Hegel, she knows German very well. I actually saw her face to face in Frankfurt 2012 when she got the Theodor V. Adorno Prize. She gets high awards, Rockefeller. She's a member of the Rockefeller Foundation, and she says it in the title, Subversion of Identity.
That's
away with the binary structure. We don't need this. That's the word gender. It is a social, your sexual identity is a social construct. If it's a social construct, we can deconstruct it. And this is what she sets out to do with unbelievable success.
Yeah.
Supported by the elites of this world.
And what role is the United Nations playing in this?
What did you say? I didn't get you.
What role is the United Nations playing in all of this?
They are at the forefront of it.
Mm-hmm.
They're pushing all this. They have put their homosexual strategists in powerful places. They are pushing it all over the world. And their Catholic family, Austin Roos, is fighting against the news organization, and you get all the news from him. They're now very good people active in the United Nations, actually resisting it and informing people and calling for conferences, like the Family Watch Institute in Phoenix, Arizona,
mm-hmm.
Is excellent, doing excellent work and Austin Roos and others.
Would you say that the Catholic Church, institutionally speaking, is the primary force of resistance to this revolution?
I do think so.
Yeah.
At least it was.
Yes, okay.
I do think, yes, definitely. I mean, we have this wealth of teaching of John Paul II.
Mm-hmm.
We had Benedict XVI, who was absolutely crystal clear on these issues,
mm-hmm.
in great love. If you, Caritas et Veritate, if you read all these things,
yes.
It is a crystal clear mind coming from a place of love and compassion.
Yes.
And we had this very clear teaching. Now it is a bit more difficult.
You know, I wonder, in some ways, I agree, Pope Francis does not speak with this same clarity that we had with Benedict XVI.
He does call, by the way, he speaks about demonic ideology. He
yes.
calls gender ideology a demonic ideology. He does find very clear statements against gender ideology.
That is true. Yes, he has.
Yeah.
Very explicit.
Yes.
What I'm wondering here is, given that Christians, especially Catholic Christians, believe that we have an understanding of life rooted in creation and natural law, as well as divine revelation, we are committed to avoid coercing others, but we're fighting people who are very happy to use the coercive power of government to get their way and to belittle, marginalize those people who oppose them.
Yes.
What do we do to fight back effectively?
I've just written a little book which has come out in German. I will publish it in English also.
Good.
Via Amazon, I think. It's called Christian Principles of the Political Battle.
Good.
It's a short little book, and the difference for us is that we cannot use evil means to gain a positive aim.
Yep.
And our enemies think they can and they do. So we are in a way restricted. We have to use good means because only from good means can come anything good. The first demand for us who go into this battle is that our own life adheres to Christian principles. And that is also a good message, because nobody can keep us adults who have some power of decision, to form good relationships, to have a marriage which says, yes, until death does part us, to bring up our children on Christian principles. Yet, here we are already in great difficulties, because the state is doing everything to remold children according to this new ideology by sexualizing them in school.
Yeah.
And this is happening in the USA too. I think you still have more influence, the parents. But in Germany, it's just mandatory sexual education, and they teach small children before puberty they have to pull condoms over penises, and they are taught about oral and anal sex and what have you.
So this is mandatory in Germany now.
Yes, it is. Yes, we have demonstrations now, but you cannot pull out. Parents have no right to take their children out of this. And it is not just a few hours, let's say, in grade four or something. It is, they now say in every subject from grade one to the end, you have to deal with sexual diversity. That is LGBT. Mm. And tell children they can change their sex, it's fine, and accept any kind of sexual activity and so on.
Is there the same kind of unanimity among public officials in France, Norway, throughout the European Union?
Resistance is rising up.
Okay.
But it is usually resistance against the elites in power.
Gotcha.
There were huge marches, Manif pour tous in Paris. I was at the first march. I was there. There were a million people on the streets who opposed mariage pour tous and also sexual education of children. Hollande had the power and pushed through his law. The same in Rome. A million people or more on the streets. Outspoken against sexual education, the people in power don't care. They have the power, they'll make the law, it will change society. So we have resistance rising up. In Germany, it's not nearly as big. We had something like 5,000-6,000 people on the street. I spoke at several of these demonstrations.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do, you get pretty severe against you.
Well, I've got one last question for you because we're running out of time. The elitist left in the United States, and I assume in Europe too, has been very very soft on Islam. And I'm wondering where do they expect this to end? Islam certainly, in its own teaching, doesn't correspond with this gender ideology.
This is a contradiction. I must admit I cannot explain, because Islam is against anything radical feminism is for or the LGBT movement is for.
Right.
Islamic nations have the most severe criminalization of homosexuality, even the death penalty. How is it possible that the left says, let them in, let them in, let them in?
Gabrielle, we're out of time, but I'm looking forward to your booklet.
No, just this one sentence. I think it's against Jesus Christ, and that unites them.
Yes. We will talk again. So much. Thank you. The Global Sexual Revolution, Gabrielle Kubi, and we'll be watching for her new book as well on Christian Principles of Resistance.
Beacon Skin and Surgeries is a comprehensive dermatology center on the border of Troy and Rochester Hills, south of M59, and in Dearborn, west of Telegraph. Beacon Skin and Surgeries perform full skin exams and focus on the diagnosis and treatment of all types of skin cancer and precancerous lesions. All are board-certified dermatologists and fellowship-trained surgeons. Call 248-852-1900. Beacon Skin and Surgeries, a beacon for patient care. 248-852-1900.
You have choices, but you're not pro-choice. At Charity Mobile, they realize that you have choices when it comes to mobile phone service. Charity Mobile is the pro-life mobile phone company. They send 5% of your monthly plan cost to the pro-life charity of your choice and have sent charities nearly $2 million to date. Charity Mobile provides great service and coverage on America's largest and most reliable 4G LTE network. And there are no contracts, no termination fees, and no risk with their 30-day trial. Call 877-474-3662 or go to CharityMobile.com today. Mention Ave Maria Radio and get a free 4G LTE smartphone, plus free activation and free shipping. Life is calling. Take it with you. Call 877-474-3662 or go to CharityMobile.com today. That's CharityMobile.com.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
The Catholic solution to the healthcare problem is here. Are you fed up with the current healthcare system, paying too much for your healthcare cost? Solidarity HealthShare is a healthcare sharing ministry which provides an ethical way to fund healthcare costs while protecting and practicing our Catholic beliefs. Best yet, Solidarity HealthShare's members are exempt from the fines and penalties in the Affordable Care Act.
Visit SolidarityHealthShare.org to join like-minded Catholics in sharing medical expenses.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. Thank you for being with me this hour. We got another great hour coming up. But do follow up on our conversations today by heading over to SolidarityHealthShare.org. Get more information on alternatives to the our present health care system. I guess system is still the word you can use for it. Coming up in the next hour, there are a few topics that I want to touch upon. North Korea and Christians. You don't put the two together, do you? I mean, South Korea has had extraordinary Christian revival over the last generation. And in fact, South Korea has been, especially Protestant Christianity, has been revived in many ways through South Korean pastors who had missionaries who have been sent out from there. But what about the invisible Christians of North Korea? At one time, North Korea, and the capital of North Korea, was called the Jerusalem of the Far East. It was, in fact, a vital spiritual center of Christian faith. We're going to talk that over. Also, there's a meeting next week in Rome that will decide the fate of the Belgian Brothers of Charity. This is a hospital group that, again, bears the brother's name, and it says it will defy the teaching of the Catholic Church and continue offering euthanasia. I want to go over what's at stake there and how this breaks down. It's not as the ethical issues are as clear as you might think, but the institutional issues are cloudier, and I want to take a look at those. And then, speaking of institutional changes, and I just want to lay before you a news piece where it looks as though Pope Francis is retooling the John Paul II Institute for Marriage and Family, moving it towards what they call a theological and scientific institution. I'm going to go over just the brief outline of this plan today. And then after I get a chance to speak in depth with moral theologians like Dr. Mark Latvik, Dr. Janet Smith, we'll revisit this topic to see if this, quote, retooling of the John Paul II Institute for Marriage and Family will in fact be strengthening the work. So, but today, I'll just go over the basics with you. Stay with me. We got another great hour ahead of us.
This hour of Cresta in the Afternoon is co-produced by Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Would you like a copy of this program? If you miss a part of this program or want to hear it again, Ave Maria programming can be made yours when you order. Just call 734-930-4506. Within a few weeks, you'll receive a copy of this show and any others you want to order on CD. Call 734-930-4506.
The Light of the World Retreat is coming back to St. Malachy's starting at 6 p.m. September 22nd through 25th. Join us for this free retreat experience where all meals are provided and you go home to sleep in your own bed every night. Sign up soon as spaces are limited. Contact St. Malachy Church via telephone at 586-264-1220. Once again, that's 586-264-1220. 1-220 to sign up for this life-changing event.
Holy Spirit Roman Catholic School is the number one elementary school in the Diocese of Lansing in language arts and mathematics. The children pray every day. Located off US 23, south of Brighton, take exit 55. Holy Spirit is founded on the belief that they must educate the minds, bodies, and souls of children through faith and academics in accordance with the teachings of the Church. Tuition rates are very affordable, and their teaching staff is top-notch. Come see them at HolySpiritRCS.org.
Looking for affordable Catholic health care? Look no further. CMF Curo is the only Catholic health ministry which provides an established health care program, spiritual growth opportunities within Catholic community, and unique wellness programs and health tools. Plus, it is half the cost of many insurances. Learn more at mycatholichealthcare.com.